Our guest is Bill Jacobson. He's a professor of law at Cornell Law School, founder of Legal Insurrection, and the president of Legal Insurrection Foundation. They had a reporter in the courtroom throughout this case. Bill, let's start with exactly what happened in this case. Y'all lay that out in the article, but I won't read that. Let's put into context what led to this. The day after Donald Trump is elected, there's a shoplifting call to the police, and if you would, take it from there.
Sure. This is Gibson's Bakery, in existence since 1885, if you can believe it. Five generations, three of whom worked in the business at the time of this incident. So the day after Trump's election, as the campus, liberal Oberlin College campus, is basically in meltdown, a black male student is caught at the bakery. The bakery also has like a mini mart as part of it. So he's caught in the bakery shoplifting, and he's stopped by the younger of the Gibson family, somebody who's like 30 years old, and a scuffle breaks out. And two black female students who were accompanying him and apparently also engaged in shoplifting attacked the owner. The police are called, and the police show up, and the three students are arrested. They will eventually plead guilty to shoplifting. They will, as part of their plea statement in court, acknowledge that there was no racial profiling going on, and they also pleaded guilty to aggravated trespassing. But that's 10 months later. The day this happens, the campus views this as an incident of racial profiling and racism, and the students immediately start to organize, with some help by faculty and administrators, to protest the bakery, to call for boycotts of the bakery, and to essentially try to shut it down. And there were protests starting the next day after the shoplifting incident and the arrest. There were hundreds of students, faculty, and some administrators there. The protests went on for 2 days. They were so aggressive that the police chief, or one of the policemen from the Oberlin Town Police, testified in court. They considered calling the county riot team in because they were concerned that they were spiraling out of control. Now, critical for the case is that one of the senior most Oberlin College administrators, the dean of students, was present at the protests. According to witnesses who testified in court, she was essentially organizing the crowd with a bullhorn. She denies that, but witnesses testified she was. She handed out at least one, and witnesses said more than one, flyers accusing the bakery of having a documented history of racial profiling and racism. And it was that flyer that was handed out by a senior college official which would give rise to the defamation case because there was no racial profiling. Additionally, the student senate, the Oberlin College Student Senate, passed a resolution stating that the bakery had a long history of racial profiling and documented history of racial profiling. And that message, the administration helped spread on the campus. So this is what happened. The students boycotted it. The college boycotted it. The bakery used to have a contract with the food service provider, which was terminated. It was eventually reinstated, then terminated again. But the long and the short of it is they lost their business with the college. And this bakery that had been around since 1885 ended up having to lay off almost all of their employees. I think they had about 10 employees. They only were down to one. The owners stopped taking salary for 2 years. The bakery came within an inch of going out of business. And this is a story of defamation, the jury found, against this bakery that led to very real consequences. And the jury ended up awarding the bakery itself and the two owners a total of $11 million.
Professor Bill Jacobson is our guest. In their general counsel's letter to members of the Oberlin community after the jury came out, they made the case, hey, look, we're here to facilitate free speech, and that's what this was free speech. So why do they have a legal duty if in fact they are promoters of free speech. This is what a university should be, students out having opinions.
Well, that's, I think, an issue that was put to the jury, that was argued to the jury. And the plaintiffs, the Gibson's Bakery people, said, we are not coming after the college and its dean of students because of what the students said. We are coming after them because of what they said and did. They passed these flyers out. They distributed the defamatory student resolution. So if all Oberlin College had done is say, hey, students are students, they can say what they want, there would not have been a case. But it was the active or alleged active participation of the college and its senior administrators in spreading the defamation that gave rise to the lawsuit. And that's a nuance that's getting lost in some of the media coverage. New York Times covered this today and promoted this as an issue of free speech rights on campus. Mm. It's not. This is not the college being held responsible for what students said. It's the college being held responsible for its own conduct in distributing and what we call in the law publishing defamatory statements about the bakery. But that was all argued to the jury. That was Oberlin College's defense. This is just a free speech issue. The jury didn't buy it. The jury didn't believe it. Jury found that they acted with malice and that they defamed Gibson's Bakery. And the judge ruled as a matter of law that these statements that were made and distributed by the college were not protected opinion. They were not constitutionally protected opinion because they stated facts about the history of Gibson's that were factual statements. So if the only accusation had been the bakery is racist, that might be protected opinion.
Right. But Professor, can you hold with me for just a moment?
Yep.
We're going to go through the actual counts: libel, tortious interference with business relationships, tortious interference with contracts, intentional infliction of emotional distress, which I don't think they got. But we're going to talk through that with Professor Jacobson coming up, and whether this could lead to fewer social justice warriors boycotting companies. Because if you didn't have the campus, the university with a big bank account, there probably wouldn't have been any relief in this case. Coming up.
The Michael Berry Show.
LegalInsurrection.com is one of the websites you've heard me mention that I use as show prep. The founder of that is Bill Jacobson. He's the president of the Legal Insurrection Foundation. He's a professor at Cornell Law School, and he is our guest. Professor, I don't want to get too deep into the woods, but I want to drill down on what happens in future cases. Without a university, and we'll get to their umbrella policy, and I know you've had some things to say about that, and there are some developments there. But without a university and an insurance policy and deep pockets, the Gibsons would have had no real recourse against a bunch of students, would they?
No, they would have had a legal claim against them, and they might have won, but you're going to end up chasing a 19-year-old who probably has no money, who probably has student debt. So, yes, without Oberlin College involved, there would, for practical purposes, be no lawsuit because there would be nobody to collect from.
Right. So every general counsel of a university in the country today is issuing an edict to every senior administrator. This is how we avoid those cases. At a minimum, I'm assuming that is, do not participate physically in any of these student protests. Fair?
That's true. Don't become a participant in it unless you want, as part of your employment, don't become a participant.
How far could that liability be stretched? What short of participation might bring liability on the university?
Well, it would be spreading the message that is alleged to be defamatory. So I don't know that you only have to be physically present when it happens, but if you use the college facilities to spread a defamatory message, then you are arguably just as responsible as the person who made the statement.
When you look at a libel case like this or defamation case, the Gibsons' reputation, each of them individually, and then the business, don't you have to have a mens rea of a malicious intent? Not only do you have to say they've engaged in racist behavior, but you have to know that's not true, right?
Well, this is a case where the court held pretrial that they were private figures. They were not public figures.
Okay.
So it was a much – they could have been held liable for either malice, which would be your typical public figure, what we're all used to reading court cases about. Or if you're private, then it could be negligence. In this case, the jury did find malice, which is why they're going to punitive damage phase, which is phase two. So it doesn't make a difference. But no, the court held that the Gibsons and the bakery were not public figures.
What exactly did they find was malicious? That they knew them not to be racist and did it anyway?
We don't know that because the jury simply answers questions on a jury form, yes and no. They don't have to give an explanation. Perhaps when this is all over and the jury is discharged, some of them will speak, but we don't know if that'll happen.
Do you know?
We don't know what the jury was thinking.
Was there any liability on ending the contract with them? Because I know tortious interference with contracts was part of that. I'm assuming one of the contracting parties was the university.
No, the contract that was they claimed was interfered with was the contract between the bakery and the food service company.
Oh,
and
okay.
That was an issue at the trial, and the jury actually asked a question about that part of the form, because if Gibson's had merely contracted directly with Oberlin College, there would have been no claim, because you can, as a matter of law, interfere with your own contract. But because the contract was with a third party, the food service distributor, food service company, then that serviced the dining halls, that was allowed to go to the jury. And the jury actually asked a question about that. So the interference was with Gibson's business relationship with the food service company.
Okay. Where was the venue? Because this would be most interesting to put their reputation on trial if, in fact, these were their neighbors.
This was not, the court was not in the town of Oberlin. It was in a town, I think it's only about a half hour away, called Elyria, okay. Ohio, but it's in the same county, and it's Lorain County. Very interestingly, early in the case, Oberlin College tried to get the case moved to Cayuga County, which is where Cleveland is. They tried to get it moved out of their home county, claiming that pretrial publicity would make it impossible to get a fair jury. That was denied by the court. So Oberlin did not want to have this case heard in the county in which they live.
Right.
And I think that tells you something about how out of sync they are with their own environment.
Yes, it does. Do you see a slew of these cases coming in the future?
No, I don't. I really don't. I think this was a really unique confluence of events. But I do think universities will be more cautious going forward in terms of what the university does to advance the social justice warfare and to advance statements that may be defamatory. So I think there will be an issue there, but I don't see a slew of cases. I don't think this is like the Covington Teens case, where, you know, the media coverage of the protest in Washington. I think this is a very different sort of case, but who knows whether this will inform that case as well.
Well, if you take the university out of this and you look at other entities that are similarly situated, let's take the Gawker ad, Gawker case that Hulk Hogan brought. I mean, he won a pretty big lawsuit there, right?
That's right. And I don't know what the legal theory was there, but if you are an employee acting within the scope of your employment, okay, and the college said that when the dean of students went to this protest, she was acting as the dean of students, not as a private individual.
Right.
But if you are an employee acting within the scope of your employment and you defame somebody, your employer is potentially liable.
Well, and see, that to me is what opens this up to the potential Pandora's box of litigation of individuals acting seemingly as a representative or agent of their company in organizing these sorts of things, whether they be an agent of the SEIU or La Raza or Black Lives Matter or the NAACP or any other organization of any other political bent. I think that's what's going to make this interesting.
Well, the key thing is that what you have to have in order for a libel claim is not a mere expression of opinion. You have to have false statements of fact about somebody that impugn their integrity, et cetera.
And do you have to have damages?
And you have to have damages, yes. You have to show damages. So some sorts of claims are presumed to have damages. If you accuse someone of criminal conduct, things like that. But yes, you generally have to show damages unless it's per se libel, they call it, unless it's presumed to be damaging. But the key thing is you have to have statements of fact, not merely opinion. If all Oberlin had done, and I think the judge wrote this, had passed out a statement that accused the bakery of being racist, that probably was a protected opinion.
Right.
And there were other claims, there were other documents spread by people at the college that the judge would not let get to the jury, that the judge would not let get to trial because the judge found they were constitutionally protected.
Professor, opinion. I'm up against a break. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Legalinsurrection.com to learn more. We use it as show prep here on the show. There's plenty more to this case Professor Jacobson has written about. They do good work. It's one of those organizations out there that a lot of these stories come to us because there are good people out there finding them, writing about them, arguing them. So check them out.